You are listening to CKMS News on CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of the show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website, canada-info.ca. I'm your host, Shalaka Jadhav. I'm delighted to be chatting with Crystal Mari, Senior Curator at the Kitchener-Waterloo Art Gallery, for a two-part series uncovering Deanna Bowen's Black Drones in the Hive. Deanna Bowen's work maps power across the archives to unearth damning narratives on Black survival across Canada and the United States. In part one, Crystal will talk about her role as a curator slash co-conspirator, share some of the themes of this timely exhibit, and some of the behind-the-scenes stories that illustrate the journey of bringing these works together. In part two, Crystal will dive into some of the curatorial choices that bring the exhibit to life, the unlikely patternicity that links some of Kitchener's historical characters to themes in the exhibit, and the evolving role of art spaces in supporting collective movements beyond the gallery. Can you share with the listeners a little bit more about your role as a curator at KWAG, perhaps in, you know, bringing some of these lesser seen narratives in the region to the surface?
Sure. So I am the senior curator here at the Kitchener-Waterloo Art Gallery, and in that role, I oversee and guide our exhibition program. But I also help shape our collection through the acquisition process and our publishing through our various catalogs and books that accompany our exhibitions. So in my role, I work quite closely with artists, but I also work with collectors and other institutions and peers in similar roles. And for Deanna Bowen's exhibition, Black Drones in the Hive, I am the curator, but I'm also a co-conspirator, and I work quite closely with artists, especially an artist like Deanna, when we're producing a new project, producing and premiering a new project.
I love that word, co-conspirator. I'd love to, I'm sure that energy will unravel through this conversation as well.
I hope so.
Wonderful. So it's the centenary of the first ever exhibition of the Group of Seven Painters, and KWAG has chosen to premiere this incredible body of work, Black Drones in the Hive, as the cornerstone of the fall programming. So can you tell us about the significance of this curatorial choice, the connections between the Group of Seven, and maybe share with us how the title serves this body of work?
So why this year? Well, you know, I think for many of us who work in the arts in Canada, we have been bearing the burden of the Group of Seven for a long, long time. I think in many circles, the Group of Seven is thought of as the kind of the canon for Canadian art, like modern Canadian art. And that canon is exclusionary. It is not one that has been easily adapted to incorporate various other realities for Canadians. So it hasn't been the kind of canon that has reflected or created room for an Indigenous existence in this country, an Indigenous reality and history and legacies of culture. It has not been a canon that has been adaptable for immigrant narratives either. So, you know, I think we're in an exciting moment where we're starting to reevaluate a lot of different types of canons, and, you know, why not include the group among them? You know, KWAG also has a connection to the Group of Seven as well, and that our first exhibition was an exhibition of work by Tom Thompson, opened by A.Y. Jackson. And, you know, we have works by the group in our collection as well. And, you know, I think we have participated. I know we've participated in the perpetuation of that narrative. But I mean, when I think about this exciting time we're in, I think what's so exciting now is that we can revise, we can append, we can add footnotes to that canon that allow for a much more inclusive experience of art here in this region. And then the second part of your question, the title of the exhibition, Black Drones in the Hive, comes from a reference that the artist Deanna Bowen had come across when she was doing research in preparation for her show. We had conceived of her building this exhibition in residence. She would be here in the region working with us and doing all of her research in local archives. And then COVID hit and that threw a wrench into our plan. So, you know, she had to do a lot of that work remotely. She had come across a website project detailing the history of the Waterloo House of Industry and Refuge, which was a facility and an entity that I knew very little about until working with Deanna. And when we came across this, the history of the site, we noted that one of the reeves of the city who also oversaw the House of Industry and Refuge had some disparaging comments to make about one of the Black residents at the house, and he had indicated that he was a perfect Black drone in the hive, with, you know, I think the understanding being that he was perfect at doing the work that you needed him to do, but it wasn't worth entrusting anything more meaningful to him. And so, you know, we were reading between the lines, and I am a Black woman, Deanna is a Black woman, and we've been thinking a lot about labor that has been absorbed by Black citizens and the lack of value that has so often been experienced by people who are doing that labor. And, you know, we were thinking about all the different histories that get erased and the legacies that are overlooked. And so we chose to kind of reflect on that legacy by titling the show that way.
I recognize that sometimes titles do come from that research process, but I think that comment really sets a powerful tone for the work and the exhibit. And I'm glad the research sort of brought that forward, of course.
You know, this is the kind of research that is, it is the kind of research I think that can only really be done with an opportunity to share and reflect. And I say that because it can be deeply traumatizing to, as a Black person, a Black creative, a Black intellectual, to be in that all the time. Like, there has to be a way to kind of disperse that labor somehow. And, working with Deanna enabled me to, we were talking all the time. It was such a wonderful experience, right, as a curator, to be trusted with by an artist who let you in their process that way. But I felt like that was also my duty. Like, I couldn't not be that for her in a way, because I knew the weight of the subject. And I wanted her to thrive. I wanted the best work possible to come out of this experience. I needed to be support in ways that are not always perceived as the most professional ways, but I think are also the ways that are the most human.
Yeah, I love that piece about it sort of being the duty to support that work. I think oftentimes this work, like you said, is very traumatizing, and it's the joy of dispersing it that can allow us sometimes to work through it. And I think leading with joy is obviously just such a beautiful thing, especially when that joy is so like rooted in sort of endpoints and gestations of liberation. Mm-hmm. So for people who maybe haven't had a chance to come to KWAG, what are some of like the exhibit themes that they can expect to engage with?
So, you know, this exhibition is a sprawling exhibition, and and I'm proud that it is that way. It takes up all of our temporary exhibition space, which really enables us to kind of flex different strategies for engaging visitors and allows for different aspects of Deanna's practice to have space to affect the viewer. So some of the kinds of objects and artworks that you'll experience in the exhibition include video. There are objects that have been acquired by Deanna. There's ephemera. There are many, many prints, 100 or so prints by Deanna. I say by Deanna because she has found them and she has sourced them from various archives, national archives, university archives, regional archives, and, you know, internet archives. And we can think of it, Wikipedia as a type of archive as well. So she's created these kind of constellations of images based on all of these ingredients, so to speak, that she has at her disposal. You'll see a constellation that reflects on eugenics, which has some connection to local history here. You'll see constellations that reflect on military brotherhood, which allows for us to reflect on, you know, a connection that Deanna has to this history in the sense that her second cousin, twice removed, Private Columbus Bowen, was part of Canada's all-black battalion, the number 2 construction battalion, and a segregated battalion. And we see works that reflect on the histories of slavery and emancipation in North America. And then there's also, well, I should say, actually, there's two more constellations, one that reflects on the local history and lore, in a sense. So there's images of the bust of Kaiser Wilhelm being recovered from the lake in Victoria Park. We see a cluster of images that reflect on Indigenous leadership in this area, namely in southwestern Ontario, thinking about Joseph Brant and the land and the descriptions of the land. But I think what's critical to keep in mind with this cluster, as with other clusters or constellations in the show, is that they're all showing us a version of the archive as seen through the eyes of the kind of white colonial settler, right? Like, these are not images of Indigenous people and Black people that were created by them in their own likeness, and that changes things, right? Like, that changes the way that we read that historical matter, right? And kind of creates gaps in what we can imagine is understood and acknowledged by the maker of the image or the author of the document. One other room in the exhibition, quite a different type of space, a different kind of mood in the exhibition, can be found in the room where we have gathered a number of works from our permanent collection, paintings, landscape paintings by artists from the Group of Seven, but also artists like Homer Watson, who has enjoyed a certain amount of notoriety within our region. And all of these images downplay a kind of human presence in the landscape. Very few of them have a discernible human presence that's visible in their composition. And we wanted to create this room that allows for us to reckon with the weight of representing absence. So this notion that would have been embraced by artists that were part of the group and a number of other artists who were painting landscapes, Canadian landscapes at that time, were painting them uninhabited because there was this fantasy of discovery, right? This terra nullius kind of myth that you know, the land was there to be discovered, but it also means to be colonized. And we wanted to kind of think about just the other side of that canon, right? Like, what hasn't been talked about in the last century, or what hasn't received sufficient airtime in conversation over the last century?
I really resonate with what you say about those gaps, and they're so intentional and designed. You know, when you are at QAG, on one side of the hallway is the space with the archives, and then Yes. You physically have to like cross over to enter this room with the landscapes. And that's a very interesting, tangible moment that's created.
That's such a nice observation. Like, and I say nice meaning like I've never heard that before. I haven't even thought about what that movement might actually mean, how that could kind of create a psychological separation between the spaces. So I'm going to think about that, mm-hmm. and reflect on that somewhat.
You know, in speaking about these objects and archives, it is, I feel like sometimes when you're at a gallery, you have a specific sort of perception that you see like colorful works or large works, and some may feel as if this exhibit is more of like a museum feeling. There's a lot of archives and lots of didactics that are there because Deanna Bowen pulls from archives and embeds research in such a specific and deep way that you've spoken to. And so for an audience that's maybe unfamiliar with archives and how to navigate these stories that are both very visible and also maybe a little bit invisible, what is your suggestion for engaging with this work?
Deanna is kind of embracing an archive aesthetic as well, too, right? So there are various ways in which she is acknowledging the sources of the images that she's gathering here. But it looks like more of a museum exhibition, or what we would kind of associate with or imagine to be a kind of informative, chronologically organized museum exhibition. It isn't quite that, but I could see how it would be understood as such. But she's full on a contemporary artist, right? So this is, these are the kind of methodologies of working with found images this way is what she's kind of built her practice on. But when it comes to like navigating archives, I mean, I'm still learning from Deanna how best to do this. I'm the kind of curator and creative that is more of a kind of intuitive magpie. Like I let subjects lead me and I kind of gather together what I think are critical bits and the things I don't quite understand fully, I want to sit with a little bit longer. But what I've learned from Deanna is that there's no end to any of this work. So when she's doing her research, everything is accumulative. And I think for some folks that might be really exhausting and it might be a difficult kind of paradigm in which to work, right? That imagining that your work is never really done. But when in doing that, in imagining that a work is kind of accumulative and continual and that it keeps your eyes open in a way. And so one thing I've learned about working and navigating archives, what I've learned from Deanna is that you will find things you don't expect to find. And that could change the path of your work tremendously. Like you might not even expect how that change will, or that discovery may change the way that you pursue your project. But they have to make room for all of these little realizations within the project somehow. You know, to one other thing I've learned from her is that people may say no in terms of enabling access, but that you don't have to assume that that no is concrete. That no can always change into a yes. And you can work continually to change that no into a yes. And you know, we definitely experienced that with this show as well.
Yeah, that's such a great piece around, you know, maybe it is hard when it's never over, but there's little joys, like little Easter eggs that make it exciting still with like unexpectedness.
Oh, yeah. We discovered, there were a number of images that Deanna wanted to include in the exhibition. And as to be expected with COVID, a number of the archives that we were consulting were closed temporarily or they were understaffed. And so there were severe limitations on the kind of files that we were able to access. And we had reached out to provincial archives, the Ontario Provincial Archives, and had requested certain images and we were turned down because the files were, for whatever reason, the files could not be shared with us. And you know, later on discovered there was an interloper who was working on our behalf and somebody who recognized the value of what Deanna was doing and just how important her work was. They knew her work and they wanted to see this happen, right? Like they wanted the work to be as she had imagined it would be. And so they helped us out with the images. And I remember that moment when that email came in with the good news. And I know it had deep and tangible meaning for Deanna. It meant something for me too, but it definitely meant something different for her because she was being affirmed by the archive in that moment, right? There was somebody who was saying to her, your work is important to my work. So, you know, what artists do is important to what happens in the archive. So yes, we have to be able to provide some form of mutual support.
What you just said about your work is important to my work and that affirmation is so powerful and just works on such a deep level of, yeah, like you said, mutual like appreciation and trust.
Yeah
really beautiful.
Which, you know, I don't think that's something that people of color, Indigenous people, Black folks have had the opportunity to enjoy, right? Like,
yeah,
we felt like comfortable in seeing ourselves represented in the archive in ways that we know are shaped by our own sensibilities. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. I mean, I don't know, maybe this is the first time we're actually beginning to feel like we're seeing ourselves in those spaces.
You've been listening to CKMS News in conversation with Crystal Mari, Senior Curator at the Kitchener-Waterloo Art Gallery. In part two, Crystal will dive into some of the curatorial choices that bring the exhibit to life, the unlikely patternicity that links some of Kitchener's historical characters to themes in the exhibit, and the evolving role of art spaces in supporting collective movements beyond the gallery. You can learn more about the exhibit from the artist herself on November 26th. KWAG is hosting Montreal-based artist Deanna Bowen discussing her solo exhibition, Black Drones in the Hive, in conversation with Crystal Mari herself. You can register for the virtual event on the KWAG website, kwag.ca. Black Drones on the Hive is on view at KWAG until February 28th, 2021. Check out the archive versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news and follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo. You can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover.